Hey everyone, welcome to Dual Citizens. I'm Stephen McAlpine.
And I'm David Auld. Now, the keen-eyed viewer of the video will notice that we are not in last episode's shiny, spanking new studio. We're back into two different screens. Did we blow our budget all in one week? Is something else going on? Steve, where are you?
I'm in the Witness Relocation Program, as you can tell by the aesthetic. Now, I'm in New Zealand for 3 months, actually. I'm going to be working in a church for 3 months. And this is the Airbnb for the first week while we wait to get the house that we're going to be staying in. So that's what I'm doing. I'm going to see how New Zealand is over the next 3 months when it comes to Christianity too.
Awesome. So minimalist in the background, but we still got the full content of Dual Citizens. What are we looking at this week?
What are we looking at indeed? We're going to look at J.K. Rowling. She's made the news again, as she seems to, and the Scottish hate crimes. We're going to look at Richard Dawkins' Easter message about cultural Christianity. And then we're going to look at really interesting, probably off the back of that, Nietzsche is dead. Is there a new revival coming with Christianity? Easter might have shown us that something like that might be happening. So that's what we're looking at.
Great stuff. Let's get into it.
Okay, Dave, J.K. Rowling seems to be in the news all the time. And this term called non-crime hate incidents in Scotland, what's going on with this issue? She seems to make the news quite a lot. And why is this Scottish law so important or so hostile to what she's doing?
Yeah, Steve, this is a fascinating one. So J.K. Rowling has basically taken on the law and the law didn't win on this one. The Scottish government about 3 years ago passed some legislation called the Hate Crime and Public Order Scotland Act, which came into force on the 1st of April, but it's no joke. What the act basically says is now you can be guilty of a hate crime because of something that you said simply because the person who it was said about or just happened to be passing when you were saying it, they considered it to be hateful towards them. So no objective measure anymore, just a subjective measure. I felt hated upon, going to go for it. And what J.K. Rowling did is on the 1st of April, because everyone saw this one coming, she, of course, has been active in the trans issue for quite a while, posted up a great little tweet, an 11-tweet thread, where she effectively named a whole bunch of prominent trans women, so men who have claimed to be women, and named them all as men. And for some of them actually pointed out some of the issues going on. So but one example is a famous man who's a rapist who then claimed to be a woman, went into a women's jail, but also, you know, the issue of men competing in women's sports and so on. And the Scottish police responded a couple of days later and said, no, she hasn't broken the law. So in one sense, called their bluff, effectively, and now there are people, you know, absolutely outraged that J.K. Rowling should do all of this stuff.
That seems a bit odd to me, Dave, that you could be in Scotland and not attend a Celtic Rangers match and not know where hate crime's going from.
Right? Yeah, that's right. Well, luckily the Scottish police have done a bit of a campaign, so you know exactly what a hate crime is, and they've got this brilliant little video now called The Hate Monster, and The Hate Monster looks like a rejected character from, do you remember that Dumb Ways to Die advert a number of years ago from Queensland Rail? Like a rejected character from Dumb Ways to Die, and The Hate Monster grows in you. It's a fascinating video, just 1 minute long, worth watching. We'll link to it in the show notes. Where the hate monster grows in you because you get annoyed about something and then because you think you're better than someone else or you just don't like them, you hate on them. And so we shouldn't let that. What's really interesting is a clever little bit of manipulation there where essentially if I say something that someone else feels is hateful, what the Scottish police are now basically telling me is because I don't like them and it's because I think that I'm better than them, as opposed to, of course, the really significant issues that people like J.K. Rowling are making about the whole area of women's spaces and the...
Yeah, so in a sense, there's a censoring thing and a self-censoring thing. You're a bad person. It's a moral category here. It's not just... so we're making... decisions about what you think Because we know we're thought police.
That's right. And we know why you're saying the things that you're saying. And so what's really been really interesting, and you see it again in the Twitter interactions with Rowling online, you know, people going, oh, she must be so, you know, self-loathing, the fake, oh, if only we could get her some help. Now, Rowling is brilliantly calling this stuff out and just going, yes, please do pay for my therapy. That would be great. I'd be saying, you know, I think a nice bottle of red would be good therapy for me in these instances.
Yeah. But the problem is, of course, Dave, is she's probably got enough money to get away with it. Someone else might not.
She does, but if you know what I mean. But to her credit, what she's actually done is she said, I do have enough money to pursue this, so I'm going to take a lead and test it. So in one sense, she has done us all a favor by leading from the front, getting out there, being very clear on what her position is, in the face of a lot of outrage. And I think actually it's one of those instances where we go, thank you that she has done it, as opposed to one of those other things where we go, yeah, it's okay for you if you've got the big bucks, but others get smashed.
Yeah.
In one sense, it's been a great test case for Scotland.
Yeah, so, and she's famous enough to do it and to say it. So the rest of us can sort of hide behind that umbrella a little bit, I suppose, in that sense.
I think so. Yeah. And certainly you're going to see a whole bunch of people doing that now saying, well, if Rowling could do it and the police have already said, that's okay, we at least have got a bit of a boundary for what at least at the moment is acceptable. Now, I've got to just say, because it entertains me, there is some cunning stuff going on behind the scenes. So a whole bunch of people who are protesting this law are now writing to the Scottish Police and complaining about statements made by Hamza Youssef, who is the First Minister of Scotland, who's been promoting all this stuff. So Hamza Youssef has been talking about how people are hateful in the way that they speak, and now a whole bunch of people who feel targeted by that are now going, well, Hamza Youssef has been hateful towards me. The Scottish Police are going, no, we're not taking that seriously, but we'll just see how big the administrative burden becomes on them daily having to deal with complaints.
It's a good thing that other crimes like knife crime and stealing are so low that they can spend so much time with us, Dave. But what about, do you think we've reached peak legislation? I mean, we use that term, peak, woke, peak. But have we reached it, or is this just going to get crazier?
Look, who knows? In one sense, it's a bit of a fail for Scotland, and it's for the Scottish government, it seemed to be a bit of a fail. There is a thing that goes on as well, because the police here go, well, it's not a crime, but we're still going to register a hate event. We're going to keep a record of it. And you want to go, I wonder if that will get tested soon in the courts. Is it going to be more legislation? Look, who can tell, Stephen? Here at Dual Citizens, we've been noting, haven't we, that the these activists, they do not stop. They just keep going. They don't just want to...
It's a permanent revolution.
Yeah, they don't want to just control what we say. They want to make us say certain things and expunge certain thought from the public arena. So maybe we'll get more legislation. Maybe the people of Scotland will say that's enough, as they have kind of been doing in other areas as well. The Dual Citizen will stop and watch and just keep praying to God for a government, Romans 13, that just protects the good, actually punishes evil, and lets the rest of us get on with our lives.
Yeah, no more hate monsters amongst the Scottish legislation.
No more
thank you very much.
Hate monsters. Dumb ways to legislate is what I might call it.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's an interesting one. We'll see what we'll keep an eye on her next novel to see what happens.
Yes. Now it's Easter. I'm sure you've heard a number of Easter messages, but I bet you didn't plan this Easter on having an Easter message from Richard Dawkins, who has announced that he is, I think the words are, a cultural Christian. Is Dawkins converted? Has he joined the choir eternal? Steve, what's going on?
I'm not quite sure it's at that level just yet, the Dawkins delusion. Richard Dawkins was on Leading Britain's Conversation, LBC, video on YouTube, and he was asked about what he thinks, and he said, look, I think Christianity is a much kinder or nicer religion, and I'm a cultural Christian. And what he's meaning really is, you know, as opposed to other religions that he wrote about in The God Delusion, where every religion was a dud, he's kind of saying, I like the stuff it gives us as a culture, because that's who we are.
Yeah.
Rather than that nasty Islam, for example, as he pretty much put it. So it was interesting that he softened in that sense. So very interesting.
Very interesting. So what is this cultural Christianity actually? What's that all about? What's he talking about?
Well, I think Dawkins is the last of a long conga line of leading lights intellectually.
That's an image I now can't get out of my head, Steve.
Richard Dawkins
in a conga line. Yeah.
But let's remember, 15 years ago, he was with Polly Toynbee in the UK celebrating these bus ads that said, "There's probably no God, so enjoy your life, you know, stop worrying, enjoy your life." And here we're going, well, you know, cultural Christianity, it's, you know, we've got the Bible, it's a great book, we've got freedom, we've got democracy, and, you know, that didn't just come from nowhere, you know, something Richard Dawkinsy now, it came from somewhere. And that's what he's probably had to realize.
Right.
He overreached himself with the God delusion because he should have stuck to science, right? But he got a lot of people angry. And what's happened is a lot of people are nervous when they see someone like Richard Dawkins saying that, "I like the way Christianity's formed the culture, but I don't necessarily want the roots of Christianity. I still believe this a load of tosh." And people who are really angry with him are going, no, Richard, you're getting soft in your old age.
Oh, yeah. But he's just seeing it, right? So he's still probably adamant that creation is still out of nothing, ex nihilo.
Yeah.
But now he's actually recognizing that our culture is not ex nihilo. It's come from somewhere. He's not the only guy, is he? Why do you think this is such a prevailing issue amongst, atheists and now some former atheists? We might talk about a few of those in our next segment.
Yeah, well, Ayn Hirsi Ali, famously Muslim to atheist to now writing that she's Christian and go to church, she recognizes the cultural thing as well. There's something about it, but she also recognizes, unlike Dawkins, that there's something in Christ himself. And if you want to look at a more brazen online prodigal son example, you've got Russell Brand.
Yeah.
And also you've got Jordan Peterson, and you've got this conversation that Glenn Scrivener talks about, The Air We Breathe, in his book, The Air We Breathe, that all these human rights values, and he's riffing on Tom Holland there too, didn't spring from nowhere. And Tom Holland talks about this because there's such a huge interest in history again through podcasts and things like that, and so much of it is heading back to a Christian framework. Even Douglas Murray, who's been in Australia with with one of the podcasters here, sort of tacitly admitting that he's not Christian, but he's sort of Christian in a non-Christian way.
Yeah. So as they watch the unraveling of our culture around us, they're just going, hang on a minute, there's a reason maybe we hung on to these things, and they did seem to be working. But is that enough? Because in one sense, are we just happy with cultural Christianity? Is that the back to the Christian nation? Or is there a difference between the usefulness of the faith and actually its core truth claims that underlie it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the things you'd have to say is that there is a striving, and we'll get onto this later, meaning and purpose issue in our culture and a framework for thinking of how we put things together. Now, I don't just want us to go back to the 1950s. You know, you hear that grumble. I'm not that I was ever in the 1950s, but, you know, if we could just have the conservative values again, we don't really need the Jesus stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's dangerous, and you can see a hard, graceless legalism culture, which still leaves a trail of wreckage. It's just a different kind of wreckage, I think.
Yeah.
And people still get kicked to the curb. But there is something in that, in Dawkins in particular, and not just Dawkins, but a belated, we might lose something that we wish we'd kept. That's probably the issue.
That's right. And yet still not able to acknowledge the actual source of where it came from. We could all still be living under the supposed Pax Romana, couldn't we? And, you know, and maybe you, like me, are one of these people who thinks about the Roman Empire whenever Twitter tells me to think about it. But life would be actually very different, wouldn't it?
Well, that's what, you know, I read a great quote of, you know, the high priestess of Wiccan white magic got in a time machine and went back to first century Rome. She'd come back realizing how Christian she was. And it's that whole seismic shift that the air we breathe, the water we swim in, has been so thoroughly Christianized that, as Tom Holland says, you don't recognize the revolution that won, only those you can't see it because it's so embedded in you. Yet that's not enough. You know, you go to John's gospel and it's a great framework of how the world's put together, you know, language and binary positions. But the key in John's gospel is to trust in Jesus. It's not to have cultural Christianity.
That's right.
And only that's good enough. So people come to Jesus for all sorts of reasons in John's gospel, but spurious belief or belief for the sake of what I get is never good enough. It has to be trust in him.
And yet, so we're so far downstream now of Christianity that we just don't recognize what the source was. But now that some people are trying to dam up the river flow, they're wondering why we've got a dry, arid riverbed that
we're
living and there's no life and it's not working. And so perhaps they're looking for other things or going back to wondering, maybe that wet stuff wasn't so bad after all, which is kind of my way of setting up a segue for our last and intriguing segment.
And the final point too, don't forget that this is a Western issue. Lots of places around the world, Christianity has been booming and everyone knows it's about Jesus. It's not as if it's our late modern Western post-Christian framework that's asking that hard question.
Well, we'll think about what the West is asking in a moment.
Okay, Dave, that's bringing up the issue of Easter. We've just had Easter, and one of the key issues that I saw in the paper, as it happens every Easter, is Western Christianity's in decline. But some of the anecdotal, at least, and in the papers recently, even this last week since Easter, has been that services have been so well attended at Easter, and even in Australia, where we all go away for Easter, churches were full. What's going on?
Well, what is going on? Is Nietzsche even dead? We might ask. Maybe the decline of everything hasn't happened. Look, here's what happened. Last year for Easter, we had increased numbers and we kind of went, oh, something's going on. This is interesting. Is it a blip? And so this year we looked at the numbers and they were even stronger. We were absolutely packed out at St. John's in Parramatta. And so I went something's going on here. And I asked online, I'm in a little Facebook group with other people in ministry, actually not so little at all, in Sydney, and did a little straw poll. And 53% came back, almost 100 pastors replied, 53 said significant increase on the previous year. I think about 39%, some increase. So you're getting close to 90% of pastors going, yeah, we are seeing something going on. And it's not just us. In the UK, same thing's going on. Justin Brearley just wrote an article. Is there a revival going on? And he noticed this Easter. The Catholics at Westminster Cathedral in London were having to turn people away because they were absolutely chocker packed. And so this is going on, well, interestingly enough, not amongst the mainline theologically liberal people, but elsewhere. Something's going on.
Yeah, well, I guess if Jesus did actually have to rise from the dead, but poke. But that is interesting because 4 years ago during COVID, I remember Peter Fitzsimons, that grumpy atheist who's an outlier, said, well, old people follow religion, and they'll die because of COVID. So this will be a quickening the death knell of Christianity.
Yeah.
Yet somehow, what is going on, Dave?
Well, you tell me, Steve, did you experience the same thing where you guys were?
I was away speaking at an Easter camp, and what was interesting about that was a whole generation of young people who are keen as mustard with their Christianity, but under no illusions that somehow, you know, turning up is going to, you know, be a good, you know, the culture thinks it's a good thing or that their friends do, but super keen and super happy about it, not sort of grumpy. So it feels like across the board, looking at churches, there was an increase. And that's probably obviously Christians maybe going, you know what, I'm not going away for the Easter holidays camping. Maybe we will go to church because we need some framework. Is that possible?
Yeah, maybe. So just more determined than ever to go. But we certainly saw a large number of guests and visitors and explorers as well. Yeah, so yeah. I think something going on. And again, just to pick up on the thing you said a moment ago, this supposed death knell, you know, Peter Fitzsimons gleefully, we're just not seeing it. Our congregations are increasing across the whole Sunday, and we're a typical Anglican church, so first service, more traditional, the very last service of the day, far more contemporary. They're all increasing, but the place where we're getting the most increase by far and away is the 5 p.m. service with those students, mainly people in their 20s, It's just growing and booming. And I have a sneaking suspicion that what's going on there is that the gospel and the communities that it forms and the frameworks for understanding the world, those truths that it expounds, it's making a lot of sense, both intellectually and sort of experientially, for our people, where the modern promise of, you know, the hate monster and everything else, just isn't doing it for them.
No, and look, it's interesting, the Sunday idea of, you know, the church, was it Sunday service? I can't remember what it's called, where there was no God, but it was a sort of a...
Yes.
They're not booming.
Yes.
You know, you've got to have something at the center of your community, don't you think?
Yes, and so, you know, just objectively, something that's a core idea that's holding people together, and that there isn't something is not a great thing to hold people. You know, if I just want nothing every week, I keep watching Sheffield United. That's what I do. That's what I do for that. No,
that's purgatory.
That's right. Constant purgation. And something's going on, and it's not just going on at that kind of just that sort of normal proletariat level, if you like. We're seeing lots of it's happening, and we've mentioned a few in our previous segment. Yeah, you know,
famous people.
So, you know, we've mentioned Ayaan Hirsi Ali, Jordan Peterson, Russell Brand now reckons he's a Christian. Did you see that fascinating girl Nala Ray, who was an OnlyFans model, who just ditched it all, showing off her body and worse online. Former pastor's daughter who just rebelled against it all and recently on TikTok put the picture of her baptism on and right. has just gone, it's yeah. actually, it was empty, it gave me nothing, all this cash. And Jesus is going, yeah, what does it gain you to gain the whole world?
Who would have thought
that Jesus was right? So it's happening everywhere.
Well, this is the thing, right? We're a friendless society, and we all realize that we, you know, everyone's being paid out on or cancelled for something. And Jesus is the friend of sinners.
Yes,
it's like, you know, that's an issue, isn't it?
And he makes sinners friends with each other, which is brilliant in a world where if you're a sinner, what do you get? You get you know, the 2-minute hate. You get the walk of shame. You get cancelled immediately. But now we've got sinners who are going, actually, I can be in a community of other sinners, and we love each other. And for our young people, that is very, very attractive. I can think of more than one conversion story at a church with us where that's been exactly what it's what's gone. Genuine community.
Tell me, Dallas. Sorry, interrupting you there, but a good term that Tom Holland says: are we just cosplaying Christianity? You know, explain that briefly round this channel.
Sure. So cosplaying is when people dress up as their favorite characters from, you know, movies and games and so on. Tom Holland can get to ask that question because I reckon he probably still is. He likes the look of it. The clothes, he just realized the clothes fit really, really well, but he's not fully in on it yet. But no, we are seeing stories of people who are not cosplaying at it. They're actually seeing that there is this is the story that they want to be part of. This is the great game that actually everyone wins because Jesus has gone before us and won before us. And that's particularly attractive in a world where, you know, the game of life is failing. And it's not, you know, you drive your car all the way along and you can put whatever colored pegs you want to in the car these days. And you get to the end of it and you just go, there's actually nothing here. And Jesus goes, yep. So let's rethink that. And it's exciting.
Well, here's a thought, Dave. Yeah. Next stop, J.K. Rowling. When she adds to that list, I'll be really intrigued.
Well, she knows all the Christian stuff, doesn't she? I mean, she knows all about it.
Of course, because her books.
Her books are absolutely full of it. So there's a lot that's there. That would be a good thing. Here's what I reckon we should be doing, Steve. Praying for these individuals. They're under incredible media and public pressure. But also recognize that it is by loving one another that other people will see how great Jesus' love is. And I think somebody famous said that once as well. When they see how we love one another, they'll know that we're his disciples. And we'll make new disciples that way as we have the lived out truth and then proclaim to them in what we say.